Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody! Welcome to 2013. It's January 9th, 2013. Can believe that. Anyway, everything's still the same. I was having a chat with Jerry yesterday, same old Jerry, and I was telling him, I was giving him some free advice about how to manage who he follows on Twitter. I said, go to tweetbeat.com, and the first thing you do is find the people who haven't posted in 6 months and cut them. Of course, Jerry didn't agree with me. He never does. He said, listen, animal, I'm going to tell you how to manage who you follow on Twitter. First, you do a search on the word culture, and whoever uses it is gone. Get rid of them. Then you do a search on interview tips. Whoever uses it is gone. Then resume help. And I laughed. I thought it was smart because, you know, we have this stuff coming out of our ears. Everyone is posting it all day long as if it's a new revelation. But you know what? I learned a lesson this morning. I got an email from LinkedIn, and I realized that no matter how many times this job hunting advice is getting posted, it isn't getting through. I got this note. Here's what it said. Hi, animal. I'm looking for work. Can you assist? Then the guy's name, Harvey Slacker. That's not his real name, by the way. Don't sue me, Harvey. I'm looking for work. Can you assist? And I'm thinking, can he give me a clue as to what he does so I'll know if it's worth clicking through? How about, hi, animal. I'm a senior XYZ consultant. I'm looking for a new position in Milwaukee. Is my background of any interest to you? Well, he didn't have that, but I clicked through to his profile, and it was total trash. It was trash. It only includes his current job, and his summary is so verbose and full of hackneyed phrases that it made my eyes glaze over. He calls himself, quote, a results-driven professional with a comprehensive background in. You know, put that phrase into Google. You get 4,000 results. That's how many suckers, morons, that's how many morons, I didn't want to say it, are just pasting that exact same phrase into their resumes because they think it says something when in fact it says nothing at all. This guy, he goes on to call himself, you know it, a visionary leader, of course, and he's strategic, and he drives innovation, and he's a great communicator. Are any of those words necessary? No! They say absolutely nothing. They just make it harder to get real information. And the scary part is, I wouldn't be surprised if he paid someone to write that for him. Anyway, so here's my invitation to all you job hunters out there. If you want advice from results-driven professionals for free, I know where you can get it on Jerry. Jerry, what show is this?
This is the Recruiting Animal Show!
Introduce you. I'm talking to Jerry. This is our special time, okay?
This is our time. This is our time.
Happy New Year, Chair.
Oh, and the same to you. Are you guys on the same calendar year up in Canada?
Yeah. I was going to say we're 6 days behind, but we're not. That's the Greek Orthodox calendar.
It's not metric or anything?
Yeah, okay, look. You know, I just want everybody to know I wrote back to that guy, Harvey Slacker, who sent me that message, and I gave him the same advice I mentioned here, and he wrote back to me. He said, Animal, your advice was blunt, but appreciated. Blunt, that's like a backhanded compliment, but you know what? That's a good, positive compliment to me. He should be so lucky that someone would say that to him, that your resume is blunt and straightforward, that it only says the stuff that has the most impact. It's not filled, I'll be finished in a second, it's not filled with crappy phrases like visionary. My dog is a visionary. You know, when we go for a walk, he's a visionary leader. He's always pulling me. That's what that means. It's stupid. Okay. And now to the guest. My guest today is a guy named Daryl Daly. Now, Daryl, he spells it with one R. Somebody else spells it with two. And anyway, D-A-R-Y-L. Daly, D-A-L-E-Y. He's a headhunter. He works for himself from his own home in his pajamas. I don't know if his office is in the basement or on the first floor. Quiet! Wait till I'm ready, okay? He was referred to me by our mutual friend, R. Levine 42. You're never going to be able to spell that, R. Levine 42. Anyway, now, Daryl, are you here?
I am here.
Great, thanks. I'm glad you're so ambitious and anxious to get going, you know, but I had to hold you back, okay? But it's
yeah,
a good
no
sign. Don't worry about that, okay? Are you ready to sing?
Sing?
Are you ready?
Oh, I didn't see the
I told
you,
know, you
that,
the song.
That stipend that,
you know
that I demanded.
I'm
going to
tell
contract.
Everybody. This guy, I got to wonder, and I'm going to challenge him on this. I don't know what kind of recruiter he is or what kind of orders he takes, because I've got it plastered everywhere. I told him, no cell phone, landline, no cell phone, landline, no Skype, landline, and he calls in on a cell phone. I knew it right away because it was a 647 area code. I'm not stupid. I live in Toronto. I know what that means. Can't you take an order?
Hey, got it taken care of. Not a problem.
Okay. Well, I was going to sing, you know, My Aim Is True, because that really says a lot about me. My aim is true, and it says a lot about my guests as well, as you can see. I'm going to sing a bit then myself. He says, sometimes I wish I could stop you from talking when I hear the silly things that you say. I think somebody better put out the big light, because I can't stand to see you this way. Oh, my guest, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Daryl Daly, you got to know it. My aim is true. So you got to listen when I tell you something. And I shouldn't have to sing by myself, but I don't think I'll do that again this whole year. But I probably will. Anyway,
that's a good
Daryl, resolution. are you still here?
I am.
Okay, let me just see if there's anybody else I should open up the things for. Okay, can you stand some feedback on your website? Like, we don't know how delicate you are yet. Can you stand some feedback?
The current website will be redesigned shortly. It should be going down, well, by the end of this week, but go right ahead. Shoot.
Okay, first of all, this is your business is called Intelligent Minds. Is that correct, yes or no?
Yeah, full name is Intelligent Minds Search Consultants, yes.
Yeah, okay. So intelligentminds.com is owned by somebody else. So your web address is Intel Minds. But why didn't you buy intelligentminds.ca? It costs $10. Why not buy intelligentminds.co? It costs $10. Are you stupid? Why didn't you buy those?
No, I've had IntelMinds.com for about 15 years now, 14, 15 years.
So why is your website called Intel Minds and your business is Intelligent Minds?
It's just a short form of Intelligent Minds.
Yeah, okay. Look, you know what? The stuff you have there, it reminds me of Harvey's resume. I'm sorry, everybody, but I'm going to read a bit of this stuff. First of all, it's in the smallest font you can imagine. I had to change my glasses to read it, or if I had a magnifying glass, I would have used that. Here's what he says. Talent. Oh, somebody got a dog in the background there? Come on. Talent. It's the key to innovative thinking. It drives productivity, and it's the key to your competitive edge. At Intelligent Minds, we make finding talent easier. As a staffing and consulting partner to many of North America's recognized most recognized businesses, we understand the challenge of finding and retaining good people. That's why we're so passionate about talent, providing the best people for our clients' contract and full-time hiring requirements. That's the first relevant information. You place contract and full-time people. And providing the best opportunities for the hard-working, highly skilled people we represent. All that baloney, and you only get one bit of information there. It doesn't even tell you that you specialize in IT professionals. You have to go to the last page or somewhere down there to see that. I mean, what's wrong with you? Why did you put that in?
It's you know what? I've had that up there for years, that particular site and that particular content. As I said, it's being changed, but you know, I've been doing IT for a long time. I think for the most part, most clients, the people that I deal with.
Why put it on your website? Here's what you should have there. Welcome to Intelligent Minds. We are a full-service recruiting firm. We recruit both contract and full-time IT personnel. We specialize in e-commerce, web development, network integration, blah, blah, blah. We have a special focus on the financial industry and high-tech startups. That information is buried somewhere in your website. Come on! Your site is garbage, okay? And you're lucky.
Thank you so much for
that
critique. I will take it to the bank and try to do better for you.
Does anybody disagree with me? You heard that stuff, and I got to tell you, it was a lot better when I read it than when you have to read it. It's useless. Come on.
He says he's changing it, animal.
Okay. Well, what did he have it up there for 15 years or however long for? And look, here's what he says, Kathy, since you're defending him. He says, we are committed to staying on the cutting edge of technology in order to provide the most timely and accurate submission of candidates to our clients. What does that mean? You use email?
A number of clients also have some their own
homegrown software. What do they have?
They have some of their homegrown software, so such as TeleoSoft and whatnot. So if a client has a process that says they don't want it through email, they want it through another system that you might have to log into, happy to.
Man, are you advanced? Come on! Why did you put that in? I don't get it. Come on, it's ridiculous. Who's going to back me up on that? Anybody?
It was flowery. I mean, it was taking up space, but he's redoing it. He's redoing it.
You know what? I think that was just a dodge to dodge the bullet, okay? Okay. On your Twitter bio, that stinks too. I don't know if people want to hear this kind of stuff. Your Twitter bio stinks. Intelligent staffing, exceptional results. My name is Daryl Daly. I welcome the opportunity to meet and discuss how we can serve your recruiting needs. Could you make it any more dull? Uh-huh. Why, first of all, don't make Intelligent Minds forget it. Okay. Okay, you know what? I got to tell you something. You should use the word recruiter in there, because if someone searches on the Twitter search engine, recruiter, you're not going to come up, because you don't have the keywords in your bio, okay?
Fair enough. I will make that change.
Final thing. Nobody's interested. I don't hear any, you know, applause, but your Twitter postings, when I read them before, they really suck. You had a couple of decent ones this morning. But this is a Twitter posting that you should never put up there. Affordable, easy, integrated, secure. The revolution has begun. What are you waiting for, right? First of all, it says nothing, and then the person has to click through your link that you supply afterwards to find out. And then I click through, and it's to some Twitter it's like a LinkedIn update by Michelle Ferrazzuti. And here's what it says, okay? It says, today's worker can be at any location on any device. Consider unified communications for a flexible organization, affordable and easy. Why would you make us go someplace to read that nonsense?
She's also a contact of mine that I've dealt with for many, many years.
So?
Just
she's dull. She's
just
dull. You think someone's going to follow? You think so? You didn't retweet it. That would have been better. You made me click through to some other site to read nothing. Really, what's up? Don't you get it? And here's another one. I don't know if people don't like this, too bad. This is what I'm interested in. Here's your Twitter posting. Good on you, Wayne. Financial sense, that makes, well, sense. And then you have to click through. Why don't you just say, Wayne Gretzky's financial planning advice, that makes sense. That makes me want to click through. Yours doesn't say anything.
Well, I will take all of this to heart with my new
career. If people want to know how to do social media, I'm telling them here how to do it. Not like you, okay?
Fair enough.
Then you're
Fair
back
enough.
With Michelle. Then you're back with Michelle Rizzuti again. We have to click through. Final thing. The Security for Business Innovation Council calls cloud computing the main disruptive force for 2013. Be cautious, but don't ignore the cloud. Is that intelligent? I mean, is there anything there that some, especially in IT, that the most idiotic person doesn't know? Cloud recruiting? You made me follow through for that. Anyway.
What are we talking about?
Okay, I'm finished, Jerry. What's about social media? I know you're not interested. Your advice to this guy is get off social media, right?
For the most part.
Yeah, okay. Now, his
it's
business,
crap.
Daryl, you're a sole practitioner. Is that right, yes or no?
Yes or no?
Yeah. I've been on my own
What's
for about 15 years.
15 years in the business.
No,
okay,
about 17 years
how,
in the business, about 15 on my own.
Okay.
No,
nobody
awesome.
Wants to admit, why does nobody admit on their website that they're a sole practitioner? Here's what you say about yourself. As a key member of the Intelligent Minds team, I'm involved in all facets of recruiting, relationship building, and I am directing a team of research professionals. Mm-hmm. You work for yourself. Why not admit it?
Yeah, well, I do have other recruiters who I bring in on assignments, and that's why I word it like that.
I see.
So, for
okay.
example, if I was to have
team.
Something.
Yeah, you're a key member.
Let him answer the question, animal.
He's not answering, Jerry.
He was.
Okay. Now, here's Jerry's questions. You're placing contract IT professionals, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you use a payroll? Don't be shy now. You said you could handle it. You sound quiet.
Oh, yeah. I'm good, animal. You keep
good.
Going. I'll
good.
Answer when you have a question.
Good. Do you use a payroll service?
I do not. I run it myself.
Wow. Where'd you get that money?
I've always run it myself. I've never had to use a payroll service. The truth is when you use a payroll service, you effectively outsource the client to someone else. They have the control of the payable, and it starts. Well, you lose control.
Well, I think maybe the question was misunderstood. I wasn't asking about a funding service. I was asking about a payroll service. Like here, we use ADP, and so
oh,
just,
I mean for yeah,
yeah, like actually doing the payroll, not the funding side of it. Are you actually calculating your own payroll?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is because in IT you typically have contractors, pure contractors, so they're sending me invoices rather than being paid as temp employees.
Okay, so you're not doing employees then?
No, I don't.
You're doing all subcontracting?
Correct, yes.
Is there a concern in Canada with the person actually being an employee of your company, and if they don't pay their taxes, then it would come back on you and you'd be found to be the employer and have to pay the employer side of the taxes?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I had a client a number of years ago who had that issue, and that typically comes up. There's basically a litmus test from the government, and the government, the test says that if you are have dictated hours from your client, so you must be in that seat between 9 and 5, here's your computer, here's your email address, here's your cell phone,
yeah.
and all that, then that is potentially a de facto employee-employer relationship. If that's the case, and on top of that, for the contractor, if that client is their sole client, so let's say someone is on a one-year contract, and that's the only client that they have for the entire year,
yeah.
then it becomes an issue for Revenue Canada. With that said, I think it becomes more of an issue when the end client is directly contracting that contractor rather than through a third party.
Right.
That third party kind of gives them the, I guess, mitigates the risk.
Then really, though, I mean, the subcontractors, if they're not their own corporation or whatever structure you guys use in Canada, if they're just using their regular tax ID number, doesn't that put the customer or you kind of in a compromised position knowing that they more or less are a rented employee because they do show up every day, they function on the team, the company provides their workspace and their materials, tells them what to work on. You know, they're not a true consultant such as, say, a plumber that would come over to my house where they're bringing their own tools, they're deciding what needs to be done, working on their schedule more so than, you know, like my contractors really are employees.
Hey, do people know what you guys are talking about? Jerry,
perhaps
puts
they're learning what we're talking about.
No, I don't think anyone understands. Hold on. You know, you want me to wreck the show already? Now, Jerry,
I'm trying to save your show, brother.
Oh, yeah? Well, you're not doing a good job. Jerry sends out his people. Jerry places IT contractors. He hires them, sends them out to the employer. He pays guys on a weekly basis or biweekly basis. Then the employer, sometime down the road, pays him. So usually you'd expect, you know, where's Jerry going to get that money? He has to get a funder. But this guy, Daryl Daly, my guest, he doesn't do that. He has the the workers bill him directly, and he pays them out of his own pocket.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's actually not directly. They bill from their own corporation. So all of the contractors that I place are all incorporated. So they all have their own company, and that protects them, it protects me, and it protects my.
So it's business
clients.
To business, and then you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about if you say I don't want to use you anymore, that the government's going to come after you for unfair dismissal. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, and included with that is the contract that I actually signed. It's fairly explicit in terms of what the relationship is. It says outright that this is not an employer-employee relationship.
You know what? If that's not really true, though, in fact, the government could take you to court, or the employee or the contractor could take you to court and say, really, he made me use these words, but this is an employee-employer relationship. Has anyone ever challenged that?
I guess that's why that they are signing as the owner of their own company, right?
Uh-huh.
If they don't want the contract, don't sign it.
So then you make sure that they are incorporated, then, Daryl? You wouldn't work with someone who doesn't have a corporate structure in that
contract. Yeah, they have to send over their incorporation papers when they sign the contract. So
if you find a good guy, listen to me. If you find a good guy and he's not incorporated and doesn't want to incorporate, will you say, sorry, I can't work with you?
I will say I can't work with him on that assignment, correct.
Wow. Do you feel like at times you're missing out since probably only 5% of contractors are incorporated?
I don't find that at all in Canada. I think in Canada, I would say it's almost entirely the opposite. I'd say 90% plus of
That's
people
cool.
who are going to be contractors. And when I say contractors, I mean people who are going to be on contract on a long-term basis. I need something to fill the gap for the next 3 months. So someone that's going to be a contractor on a long-term basis, and virtually all of them are incorporated. So it's really never been an issue.
So do you find that you're missing out on the opportunities to place people who, say, recently were laid off or let go? You know, because those people, I doubt the first thing they do is go get incorporated if they're simply just looking for their next job.
A lot of them will actually do so. I find the IT contracting world and most people in IT are fairly savvy about about the advantages of being incorporated, and when they decide, whether for, employment reasons or not, they need to, need a gap. They have a 3-month gap. They just need to take something short term, or they want to do this long term. Virtually all of them go out and get incorporated. I've never really seen a major.
Wow. Yeah, very few of them do here in the States. I mean,
at the junior level, for example, if you're hiring, 20 help desk people, different story, right? They're all brand new, or maybe a year or two out of college or university. They're not that level yet. I think most of the contractors that I hire are seasoned professionals. They've been doing this for an awful long time, and they're virtually all incorporated. So it's never really been an issue.
Wow, that's astonishing. Okay, back to you, Adam.
Now, Jerry had another question, and I thought this one intrigued me. Although maybe we've just made it irrelevant. Jerry wanted to know what your policy is when clients want to hire the people you've placed with them. But from what you've told us, if they're independent businesses, that never happens. Is that right?
I wouldn't say it never happens. I mean, so let's say I have contractor X at the client, and after 6 months, the client says, "Hey, we really like this guy. We really want to bring him on board full time in a full time employer employee capacity." I think the first thing is that contractor has to actually agree to that. If they don't agree to it, then the process stops right there. I think you'll find a lot of the contractors who are, let's say full-time contractors, they've been doing this for a while and they like the contract world. They move from project to project, and that's kind of what they like to do. If that's the case, they'll just say no, and if they lose the contract over it, so be it, because they can go on to another contract. Yes, the last, you know, 3-4 years have been somewhat difficult for some contractors, you know, having with the economy being kind of weak and whatnot. But I think right now the economy is much, much stronger. Contractors are feeling confident, and they're not going to just take a permanent role if something's offered to them, if they can make dramatically more money as well as have the tax advantages of being an independent worker having their own incorporated company.
Yeah, so after that long speech, does it happen, and what would you do if it happened? They wanted to hire one of your people, and yes, he agreed. I didn't need that long preamble. What if he agrees?
If he agrees, then all I would do is I would take, a year salary. A year salary, the fee is 20 points, and because the person was there for 6 months, I would prorate it, so it would be half fee.
Okay, so but Jerry's issue is that some of them don't want to pay anything when they hire the guy, right? Is that right, Jerry?
It happens.
It does happen, and you know, then I guess it comes down to how good is your relationship, or how good do you want your relationship to be with that client next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Really? I mean, it wouldn't just be a matter for the courts.
How to win clients by recruiting animal, take them to court.
They want to steal from you. I mean, what's the let's have a good relationship with a thug. I'm going to bend over when you want me to. That's not business, is it?
I think everyone who owns a business has to mitigate that risk for themselves, right? I don't think they're going to listen to anyone else. They're going to take a look at that particular situation and say, hey, you know what? I'm making $150,000 profit a year off of client X, and they want to hire this one guy, and this one guy says, yeah, I really like to go work there. You know,
And they don't want to pay me anything for that. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Do you take a hit off the one assignment because you have a great relationship with them and you're making money hand over fist anyways? Or do you stick to your guns? I mean, I think that's an individual call.
Okay. Now, so I've heard from some sole practitioners like yourself why they like to work on their own. And they say it's because there's too much drama in a larger recruiting office when you work with other people. And a lot of those other recruiters will stab you in the back. Now, does that ring any bells with you, or, you know, you're on your own for some other reason?
I think that's extremely accurate statement. I've worked at a couple firms early on. I don't know if stab in the back, but certainly there is some office politics. And when there's an awful lot of money on the table, and in the recruiting industry, there generally is with the deals that are on the table. You know, if you have $10,000 on the table, and someone says, hey, you know, I can take a piece of that if I just speak up with this, even if it's not entirely accurate. I think a lot of people do. And
give us an example.
That was my experience.
Give us an example.
So,
you have an example?
So let's say we're going back, I'm going back well over 10, 12 years now, I mean, ages back. And, you know, I was in a small firm. I think we had about 10 individuals. We had as a recruiter, I was also managing my own clients. So I sourced my own clients. I sourced my candidates. I was working with client X, and another recruiter there was working with same client, completely different department. And she took the stand that since we were both working the same client, even though it was different departments and different assignments, I wasn't working her assignments, she wasn't working mine, or the same even context, that we should each share in the actual fees that come from it. Now, with that said, I mean, that year, I think I made, 18 placements with that particular client. She made 3. You know, I don't see why
she
should be paid out.
Wasn't that a clear policy in the company, the recruiting firm? That sounds like
basic. You know
what?
And it's so funny you say that. One, there was not a clear policy, which was disheartening. But it caused a lot of drama. And I think in this case, the owner of the firm, and I'm not saying right or wrong, but decided to go with the person who was making her the most money, which at that point was me.
That was the right
thing
to do. You're not working for the loser. Okay,
well,
how did you get in recruiting?
Hey, Animal,
what?
Mike A. Stringer wants you to open the line for him.
Now, they're all open now, sorry.
Okay.
They're all open.
Yeah, sure. What
Mike,
was your question?
Mike, did you want to say something? Mike, did you want to say something now that you got your agent to, you know, notify me?
I just wanted the opportunity to do so if I needed to.
Okay, thank you, Mike. He's in his car. I'll give him a break. Mike's an honored guest participant, okay? As long as we can barely hear him, I'll let him talk. Okay, now back to the show. Okay, how did you get in recruiting?
Fell into it right after university. In fact, about 4 months before I finished computer science, I had gone for an interview with a recruiting firm for some networking job. I can't remember what exactly it was. Sat down with the owner of the firm. You know, we talked about the job. We talked about some of the technologies, et cetera. He was pretty impressed. He says, I'm going to put your resume forward. And then he asked me a question. He just said, Daryl, you know, have you ever thought about doing this? And I frankly didn't quite catch it at the time. And I said, what? You know, doing what? The networking job? And he said, no, doing what I do, recruiting. And I had no idea what a recruiter truly was or what they actually did. So we sat down for the next, I don't know, about an hour and a half or so and discussed it. And from that point on, I took a position even before I graduated. You know, I'm here 17 years later, so that's
okay,
all
I got. You actually, you're one of the few recruiters I've met who actually has an education in the field he's working in. Now, does that make a difference for you?
For me, it does, yeah. Yeah.
In what way?
I think it helps. You know, so, for example, if I'm dealing with an HR person, I don't think having a computer science background helps with them, because they're process-oriented. They're there to fill their business unit's requirements, period. If I'm talking with the manager of that group, however, or the director of that group who has, you know, who doesn't care so much about the process of bringing someone on board, they just know they need someone.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm talking to them about their pain points, you know, what do you really need in this person? Because, you know, job descriptions go on and on and on and on and on about X, Y, and Z, and, you know, they can fly, you know, jump over tall buildings with a single bound, and so on and so forth. But, you know, what do they really need to do? What is the key technology that they need to do, or what is the key thing they need to do? And I think I have a better understanding
because of your education. Even though you've never had a job in that field.
No, I mean, I've had some small contracts during university, but never really did it afterwards.
Do you understand more? Are you better place to serve a client than Jerry, who's in the same business as you, but didn't go to university and didn't take computer science?
Well, sir, first, I don't know Jerry at all. I'm just saying that I think if I was talking to...
No, we're talking about education in general.
Oh, education in general?
He doesn't know anything about computer science.
Education in general, I think just if I can talk more intelligently with and empathize with that manager of technology or manager of operations and understand those real pain points a little bit better.
I'm not sure if I've got it in there, but empathy is an animal bad word, okay?
No more empathy.
Can we all agree that we're all more qualified to serve a client than Jerry is?
Jerry must have signed off because he's not saying a word, okay? That's all I know. Okay, so it's fine. You got the education, and why have you stayed with it? Why have you stayed with recruiting for 17 years?
For a few reasons. One, it's damn good money. It's been very good money to me over the years. That's number one. Number two, I have a fairly large family and a couple of kids. I have four kids, and two of them have some special needs. So this job has allowed me, A, to work from home, allowed me to have some more flexible time and spend an awful lot more time with my kids, which is really important. So I decided to stick with it, and I'm still sticking with it.
Okay. What are your strengths as a recruiter?
I think, I guess, one, I bring some value to the table because I understand.
No, come on. Well, I bring some value. What value? Please, you know, don't make me fight with you, okay?
No, I hear what you're saying, but, I mean, you know, hear
don't
me
say
out.
Don't
right?
say I hear
you know,
what
we
you're
just,
saying.
We just talk about the technology
off.
And understand
I hear what you're saying. Man, I don't hear what you're saying, or I don't care what you're saying, okay? I know that.
No, I understand the technology just like what we discussed. So that's one thing.
Uh-huh.
I think on top of that, I bring integrity to the table. You know what? There's an awful lot of people. We talked about some drama within agencies and larger agencies and working on your own now. You know, at this stage of the game, I don't throw shit against the wall, right, just to see something sticks with a client.
What does that mean? I mean, come on. Is this an English class? Don't talk in metaphors.
Okay.
I want real life. You know, I was on the phone with you yesterday. I said, bring examples. Well, don't worry, animal. I got them.
All right,
no,
I'll give you an example
okay?
right now. So, for example, if you have client X and they're looking for someone who does, I don't know, Java development or whatever the skill set is, there are lots of recruiters out there who will just call and call and call and bash the phones. And there's nothing wrong with bashing phones to finding candidates who have some of the skill set. But they're really not providing any value. They're saying, hey, you can do Java? Great. And they send resumes off. So what ends up happening is they send off 20, 30 resumes, and then they leave it to the client, either to the HR person, the process person in HR, or to the actual manager of the department to actually really vet the resumes and their experience to see if that's what they're looking for. So basically they're throwing shit against the wall. They're throwing as many things up against the wall.
You know what? This is a family show. You know, you're talking about your kids. Do you want them to be able to listen to the show? You want to have not be able to listen to you because you're talking dirty, okay?
Fair enough. But I think that's the example I'd like to go with. There's a lot of recruiters who do that.
There's a lot of recruiters who don't understand the candidate. They can't take a job order and have a bunch of key skills and talk to the candidate about it, even if they're not a professional in that area.
As a person who gets those submissions from those recruiters, 1,000%, absolutely.
Okay, you got Mike Astringer's vote. Go ahead, though. Fill in your details.
Yeah, I guess the point is just there's an awful lot of people who just throw, whether they understand it or not, they just get to that point where maybe it's late in the month and they're a little desperate for that one hit that month. Who knows what their reasons are? They're trying to get that little extra out of the quarter, and they just throw resume after resume, and they don't really care, and they're just hoping to get something out of it. Hey,
they don't interview the candidate against the specifics of the job requirement. They just
superficial.
Say, are you interested? And the, really? Okay. Okay. So what is that your only one? You've got integrity. You understand IT. What's your other strength as a recruiter? Do you have any?
I think that the big thing is, and that, over the years, I have been doing this a long time, and no one does this for a long time if they're not successful.
Okay, have you learned that you didn't know at the beginning of the process, 15 years ago, let's say?
A lot of recruiters don't have a lot of integrity.
Okay, so you learned about other recruiters. We've had other guests who hate recruiters, okay?
Yeah.
So recruiters cannot be trusted, but what else have you learned? Anything else? Or really, have you told us all the basics already?
No. I mean, I think for one, it's the recruiters, like you just said, clients, and then there's also the candidates. And I think a lot of candidates, especially when they oversell themselves and underdeliver.
That means lie.
In terms of,
that means lie,
what,
right? They lie. Do candidates lie on their resumes? Yes or no?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any examples?
I think I have one from yesterday. I had an individual. I'm doing some IT, very very specialized IT security type of opportunities, and I chatted with a dozen or more candidates yesterday. It's just through sourcing, and one individual in particular stands out that he says he's worked within a security operations center, and he's done this and that, and he's done intrusion detection systems and has managed firewalls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Talked about it. It's on the resume. When you go through it, he hasn't worked in a SOC, number one. He's done a little bit. He knows what an intrusion detection system is. He knows what a firewall is. He can do some basic admin on it. But is he remotely as qualified as he comes across on the resume or even when he first starts talking about it in an interview? No, not even close. I think that's what happens, especially when you have hot skills, or you think you have hot skills. You tend to overemphasize them, and the truth is your experience doesn't really measure up. So I think that happens often, quite a bit.
So that's something you learned over time, or you found that the first week?
Well, I think I found that very, very early on. You're always surprised at what stage or another what people will say and do. I'll give you another example if you let me.
Okay.
Again, funny enough, with IT security, and I passed on, had a great interview with someone, and I thought very highly of this guy. Had a great resume, had all the things that I was looking for, talked to him, had a great interview with him, and he submitted some documentation of some things that he wrote. I went through it, great stuff, like really well written, it's thoughtful, it's exactly what my client was looking for. So I submitted it to my client. So my client calls me back. It's the owner, and I know this guy very, very well. And he says, Daryl, this guy looks great. I'd love to bring him in, but I can't. And I said, why? He says, the documentation that he sent and he gave to you, he says, it's really well written, but I wrote it. So this candidate was trying to pass off documentation that, funny enough, my client had actually written. It was from a security conference, and he picked it up as part of a. Couldn't believe it. It was
But what
it was
about
actually
wisdom? We got the message. Okay. Yeah. What about wisdom? Like, you know, I'm a gray-haired recruiter now. I've been around, Sunny, for a long time, and this is the message I want to pass on to you. Is there anything like that? Doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's been pretty consistent from day one. You haven't really learned anything about recruiting that you didn't learn right at the beginning. Am I right or wrong about that?
No, I think that's wrong. I think I've learned a little bit more about clients and how to deal with them.
What are you referring to?
Well, I think sometimes clients are often looking for, you know, that candidate, that perfect candidate, that candidate that does 100% of what they want them to do. And sometimes you have to give them a little pushback and say, hey, you know, I have a candidate here who does 85%. He has, you know, or he or she has most of what you're looking for, has maybe dabbled in a little bit of the other stuff. Are you going to really let this position sit vacant for another 3 months, you know, in the hope that you're going to find the perfect candidate at the salary range that you want them? Or
well,
do you take someone on and you take them on
Kathy
and you say, hey.
Kathy wants to talk to you.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry, Kathy. Go right ahead.
I was just going to say that if you're using that sort of tactic, it's like saying that you can't provide the best qualified candidate and they're going to have to wait another 3 months. It's sort of demeaning your skill set.
Actually, I don't think so at all. I'll fight you on that one, and here's why. I think part of the reason that the clients are dealing with outside recruiters is to get a reality check. You know, if they're hearing from outside saying, wow, you know, that requirement that you have, that's really pie in the sky stuff. That's really needle in the haystack kind of
stuff.
How
do you find out that it's pie in the sky? How many people do you have to talk to before you realize that not many people have that, this guy's never going to get it, or not for a long time?
Well, it's not so much that they have that, it's just that do they have it all, I guess is my point. Not that
How
one
many
thing
people do you have to talk to before you find out it's, or before you have the guts to go back to your client and say, this is an unrealistic requirement?
It depends on how well I know that particular type of requirement. So I'm doing an awful lot of IT security roles for the last, I don't know, 18 months. Had a conversation with a client yesterday that just, I said right off the bat, I said, I think you're about 25, 35K off of in terms of what you're looking, based on the skill set that you're looking for versus salary that what you're supposed
to. What'd the client say?
We talked about it for about 15 minutes, and this role had been vacant for a long time, and I said, I asked them, how many candidates have you brought to the table that you liked and that you found out, you know, late in the process after you've already interviewed them, et cetera, and they're not, you know, you find out that they actually make already $30,000 more than what you're offering. And
well, why don't you find that out from the beginning? I mean, if you do an intake and you do a very in-depth intake and then come back to your potential client 24 hours later after you've done a search, a sample search, and then you can go back from day one and say, this is the needle in the haystack. This is what
Yesterday was that first conversation.
It sounds like it. Yesterday
yeah.
was.
So with that, yeah. Well, that client in that department. So it was.
What was the result? Did the client say, yeah, sure, I'll raise the salary $35,000 or $40,000?
About 2 hours later, yes.
Oh, really? Okay. What about
Not quite the $30,000, I mean, but at least we're in the ballpark. You know, they didn't go all the way, but they certainly recognized that they have to throw more money at this, period.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so what about your areas for development? You've been in the business for 17 years. Is there anything you still have to learn?
I certainly think there's one thing that I don't do very well. I have learned it. It's just a matter of should I know it better, and number one, and number two, should I also, develop it more, and that's RFP writing for vendor of record with a lot of clients. I find, especially in the last 4 years, a lot of long-term clients that I've dealt with have gone the vendor of record route. It's not something that I'm a big fan of. I don't know if it takes I don't know if they get any additional value out of it, but what happens is it really shuts out, not shuts out, but it certainly closes a lot of the doors for independent recruiters working from home, such as myself, and really it only allows the big firms with national presences to even apply for the vendor of record.
Why's that?
I disagree.
Okay,
you disagree?
Alan, go ahead.
Yeah.
Alan Fuhrer, Happy New Year. Go ahead.
Happy New Year to you. Hi, Daryl. I know where you're coming from. I've participated in them. I've reviewed them. I will tell you that most of them are lousy. Most of them are all templates, and you could probably put together a 2-3 page and call it good. And also, it's the main thing that it is all they really want to do is get your fee structure and your terms and do a compare and contrast. They're not looking for the lowest cost provider, and actually many times they throw out the lowest costs.
You're right.
The ones that don't are usually stupid, but you can put those together pretty quick, and normally if you have a relationship, you're going to get to the next step, and it's just a lousy bureaucratic screening procedure that's being built in these days.
Yeah, I agree with you on everything. I think I have a couple specific clients that right
do
off the bat.
Do people know what we're talking about, these vendor management programs? And you have to meet their terms in order to become a preferred vendor.
Now hold on, Animal. Let me ask you one or two different things, Daryl. Are we talking about RFPs to the? Are we talking about an RFP to the direct client, or are we talking about working through somebody like a Spherion or a System One type of thing?
No, this is RFP with the direct client. So right off the bat, they have an RFI, request for information. I get through that, and then RFP. But one of the things that I've seen, and I have, I won't say the two clients' names, but these are very large organizations. One's a telecom, one's in finance. And they went in their RFI and said outright that if any potential supplier must have a physical presence in all the major cities that they have offices. So major cities in Canada being Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Quebec City, Halifax, Regina.
Yeah, okay, we know the major cities in Canada. And if they don't, they're not going to learn them, okay? The major cities across the country, so they want someone who knows people in every city and can service them across the country, right?
No, they want a physical office in every city. Because, just because I'm based out of the Toronto area doesn't mean that I don't know people in Calgary.
Okay, yeah, but they assume if you're in the office in that city, you're going to know a lot of people in that city. And maybe you really can't meet their needs if that's what they want, right?
Potentially, but I mean, after 8 years of servicing their needs in Calgary, Edmonton, and Toronto, and Ottawa, and then they come up with this, it's somewhat insulting.
Oh, I see, okay.
It's somewhat insulting. So you kind of, and it's something that you can't get over. I'm never going to be that company with 100 recruiters. I don't want to be that company.
And you can't talk.
Recruiters.
You can't talk your way through that either, right?
No, you can't. No, not in my experience, anyways.
Okay. So what about metrics? Do you track any metrics? Do you measure what you do?
I measure the dollars and cents. Yeah.
Okay, but you don't say I'm making so many calls per day.
Oh yeah, I definitely track. I do calls for clients, calls per order. So ideally, I'm looking to talk to 25 to 50 people per requirement to get three or four candidates who are both interested, have the skill sets and are within the salary range or within the specs of the client. So I am tracking that, but I'm not tracking. So I know a few people out there do a lot of forecasting for their year. There's another area that I probably need a lot of development on. I've never really been very good at forecasting. I'm not sure if it's particularly useful in the recruiting world because things can change.
Jerry does it.
Yeah.
Jerry does it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do?
Don't you use your tracking? No, sorry, I woke you up, Jerry. But don't you use your tracking of your metrics to forecast the future in your business?
Yeah, not so much forecast the future, but to know where I am.
Yeah, exactly. That I do as well. Yeah. But forecasting,
okay.
So for example, if I was to take, to say, the last December and November of last year, what am I going to do next year? What am I going to do in 2013? And I come out with a number, and I identify that number. I say, I'm going to make $40,000 with client X. Where did I pull that out of? I don't know.
Okay. Now, where do you source your people? Can you tell us?
A lot of it through referrals. I've always found referrals to be the absolute best way of getting.
Why do people give you referrals? Do they give you referrals the first time you speak to them, or only if you've known them for 5 years?
No, some people will actually some people will give you a referral the first time you chat with them. Say,
what percentage
hey, you
of
know
people
what?
Will give what percentage of people
oh,
will give you a
referral? I'd say less than 20% will give you a referral the first time you chat with them.
10%?
Less than 20. Maybe 10%, yeah.
Okay,
maybe
fine. 10%. Okay. So how do you get your referrals? You just know someone for a long time. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around a long time, so I have a lot of contacts, and I think once you have a lot of contacts, you can put it out to your network, and, you know, if people trust you and you know, you've
do
done
you
good work
with them. Do you
pay
a referral fee if you play somebody? Do you give them a little bonus?
I have in the past, but not always.
Okay.
Not always.
Here's the Chris Fleek question. I don't think Chris is online today or listening, but he's got a question he always likes me to ask, the business development question. How do you get new business?
Yeah, that's a good one. Great question. A lot of the new business.
It's an obvious question, but I don't always ask it. That's why I'm saying. That's why I just want to pay tribute to my good friend Chris Fleek. Now you can answer.
Yeah, the last 2 years, I found the best way to get new clients and new business is also referrals. The person that worked at Company X has now moved over to Company Y and says, hey, you know what? You know who we should be using? We should be talking to Daryl because he's always provided us some good resources in the past. So that's a great way to get a client.
Yeah, but that's not a proactive way on your part. That's people coming to you, right?
Yeah, no, it's not a proactive way. Yeah, it's.
I have to say, I had a great day yesterday. I just went on a marketing blitz. I just, you know, it is a numbers game, and did a ton of phone calls, a ton of emails, and I have. Four clients, new clients set up for this week.
Congratulations, Kathy.
Thank you. It is. I think you have to really, you know, do the numbers. You can't always rely on referrals. I mean, I wish we could. But, I went back to the old techniques. And, you know, I'm going to keep on it. And I have a goal, and I'm going to meet it. But it's going to require, you know, a lot of phone calls and a lot of emails.
Daryl, Mary, do you make cold calls like Kathy does?
I do, but I have to say that I've never really considered it to be my strength, and I've had mixed results over the years with it. You can make an awful lot of calls, and you can bash away at phones for hours and hours and get nowhere. And I find it disheartening, whereas referrals, it's kind of, you know, it makes you feel good. Someone says, hey, you know, Daryl, you did a good job. So it's a little easier on it. But with that said, you know what? I think she's absolutely right, and it's something that I have to
do. You think she's right, but you really think for yourself she's wrong, okay? That's what you said.
I'd like to – you know what? I guess,
yeah, but
I guess
the question.
Point is,
I,
if she's doing it better, then,
yeah,
then
okay.
You know what?
You
I'd
sound
love to do
like
it.
You'd be a good cold caller. I'm impressed by the way you speak.
I kind of agree with Daryl here, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, straight up just cold calling, numbers game, yeah. I don't do it much. It's not the quickest way to make something happen.
Okay, let me ask him a question, Jerry. Is recruiting, Daryl, is it primarily a sales position?
It's a relationship position, which is the key to sales, for sure.
Oh, that's a dot. Is that a Jerry? I'll let you judge that one.
I don't know if I can score that answer. It was kind of a yes and no combo.
Yeah,
is it a sales position? Yes, but sales are built on relationships.
Of course, it's sales. Everybody,
yeah, I think it's sales. Yeah.
No, he doesn't think it's sales. He doesn't think it's sales. He doesn't like making cold calls. He doesn't like persuading people to use his business. He doesn't like selling, right? Do you see yourself primarily, Daryl Daly, as an information agent, just someone who carries the information from your client to the potential candidates and then does the assessment and then carries the assessment back to the client. Is that more of what you do?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm more representing knowledge athletes, period.
Oh, don't give me a line like that.
I
mean,
I
never
know,
heard it,
I know
but it's
you were
garbage.
Say
I'll
that.
Tell you right now.
I know
I
you're going to say
exactly
that.
Exactly.
Okay, you know what? If they're looking for specific skills and that skill set is hard to find, and I'm going to go out and find it and represent it, then that's it's not an information exchange. I'm not a medium for information exchange. I'm actually doing something.
You're
I'm
a sorcerer
going
in that
out
case.
And finding it.
You're
yeah,
a sorcerer.
It.
You're sourcing the people through referrals
right,
primarily.
Absolutely.
Do you use GitHub? Do you use GitHub?
I'm not familiar with that.
Did you hear that, Jer? Maybe it's not for Canadians.
Come on, man. Be cool.
Okay. Do you
I
use
need
LinkedIn
everybody
to find,
on there.
Do you use LinkedIn to find people? Because if you're using referrals, you don't need LinkedIn, right?
Well, I do use LinkedIn, number one. And
what for,
I find LinkedIn.
What for? What for?
For contacts with
for
my current
what?
Clients.
What
and
kind
current
of contacts? What contacts? What for?
Clients
what
and
for?
Candidates. Clients and candidates.
To cold call people?
No, I don't use it so much for cold calling. And the reason is I think while LinkedIn is a fabulous tool, I think it's a bit of a trap, and I think everyone knows it. So as soon as you try to use it as a cold calling, you know, tool, and that's your focus, I think it hurts your message. Period.
What do you use it for then? I don't understand. I got 5 minutes to understand how you use LinkedIn. Come on.
So I'm chatting with current clients and finding out what's going on through LinkedIn. They're passing me information through LinkedIn. You know, here's
what
a referral here, whatever else. That's also email. Yes, I'm on the phone with them. But on top of that, sometimes some individuals may get in touch with me. You know, hey, I know you know
oh,
John.
Oh, so then you use LinkedIn
company.
just to get a background on someone you've met from some other means. Is that right? It's for background.
That
checking,
is. That would be accurate. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Is recruiting a difficult job?
I think it's been more difficult in the last few years. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
One, the economy being a little weaker. Two, I think at least in Canada, and I don't want to speak for the U.S., but I found that a lot of the clients have actually brought the recruiting in-house. So they brought a lot of recruiters in to be corporate recruiters because they want to, you know, control costs. And so I see a lot of recruiters that I've known for years who have all been independent at one stage or another, and they're all accepting perm jobs in their old clients to do recruiting. So they're not really doing a pure HR function. They don't come from an HR background, but they're just doing recruiting for that client at a cubicle at that client's site. And
anybody got some final questions for our buddy here? We're coming to the end of the time. Anybody?
I've got a question, an interesting tidbit.
Okay.
Is there a particular number, and you don't have to share this because possibly I wouldn't, is there a particular number of consultants that you find once you reach that number, it's about as far as you can go, and to keep that many people going requires all of your time, where each new person you're putting to work is really just a replacement of one of the guys that bailed or left? I mean, do you have a maximum contractors
that,
on board
way,
number?
Jerry, you shared that here before, but I won't tell what it is. Go ahead, Daryl.
The maximum number of people I ever had working for me at one time, contractors, 22. And I'll tell you, being on my own, it was challenging. And, I did find that I was just replacing people at one point and not doing a lot of business development.
Mm-hmm.
So 22, I was ages ago. Most of the people I'm doing now are probably 10 to 12 contractors at a time, but these are they're much higher end contractors. You know, these are people
mm-hmm.
that are making, I'm paying $100-$120 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
When I had that 22, I think I was paying them $18 to $22 an hour for a relatively low end help desk work.
And how do you know Robbie Levine, who referred you to me?
Rob and I actually worked, I worked on a number of his requirements way back when he was at one of my clients, and for a number of years, actually, he was director of development. And,
nice guy,
I
never met him or not. He seems like a nice guy on social media.
We stayed in touch.
You stayed in touch.
We stayed in touch. He's
a
great guy, and
he's doing
all that.
Now he's a great guy, okay. Listen, I enjoyed having you as the first guest of this year. You're not allowed to stay on for the after show, but everybody else is. Thank you, Daryl!
Hey, everybody. Is anybody still here? Anybody?
I am.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got Alan, Kathy. Who?
Mike Astringer.
Astringer. And who else?
Rebecca.
Rebecca Sargent?
Yeah.
That was a good article you wrote today, Rebecca. I really liked it.
Thank you very much.
Where was it?
About LinkedIn. She had a call with a salesman from LinkedIn. It was pretty funny.
Huh. Where would I find that, Rebecca?
Recruiting blogs or on my blog.
All right.
Yeah, I'll send it to you, actually. I need to talk to you after the call anyway.
Cool. Give me a call.
Yeah.
Alan, tell me about your thoughts on the show today. First, the host and his execution of the show, and then
I'll be
the guest.
I came in a little late, about 18, 20 minutes in, so
that
what
matters.
I heard, I liked. Animal asked him some good questions. He was actually very intelligent, had good presence. Seems to know his market niche,
yeah.
And you know, didn't pull a lot of punches. It was pretty nice to hear. I think he's got a couple of. I mean, I don't know how Canada works differently, but seems like he's doing pretty good. Decent, good guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And also, hey, really quick to the group, I need to talk to some people in Canada, Jerry. I mean, I'll call Animal, but I need to talk to a couple of recruiters up there for some guidance. So if anybody has suggestions,
call Rebecca.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What's your number?
I have a U.S. number. It's 617-396-4450.
Okay, I'll call you afterwards. You can call me back.
Okay, well, give me two scores then, Alan. Alan. Okay. Hey, A. Stringer. Your work day is about done, isn't it? Don't you get started at like 4 now?
I just started at 4. I'm about to go in and meet with a client, and in about 2 hours I'll be driving from Boston to Philadelphia.
How long is that drive?
Tonight, probably 6 hours.
Jeez.
Oh.
Sorry, lost you, Jerry.
Yeah, no problem. What are your scores, Alan?
85 and 85. They were both good.
Yep, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Hey, Stringer, what are your scores, man, before you break up on me?
Hold on one second, Jerry. Hold on. I'll get on the phone. I've learned that Mercedes-Benz Bluetooth sucks.
Get a Chevy.
Yeah. I called it about halfway in also, but I like this guy. I just wish that he spoke American English instead of Canadian English. Canadian English gets on my nerves. So for that, I'm giving him an 80, but I thought he was very smart and knowledgeable. And listen, if he wasn't bullshitting us, he's a pretty ethical recruiter. And I think those, as the years go on, become far and far less common. And I'm going to give Animal a 90 because I think he ran the show today the way I wish he ran the show. Most of the time, he wasn't screaming and yelling, and he let the guests talk.
Yeah, I liked it. Thanks, Mike. Kathy.
I think that it was a good show, too. I'll go with 85 and 85.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I liked what he was saying because it's probably about the same way I'd answer my questions. I didn't realize that every contractor in Canada was incorporated. That was news to me because none of them are down here. I mean...
Yeah.
One out of 5 or 10 are.
Right.
And telling them to do it is kind of a nightmare unless you have an accountant that can set it up and take it off the top.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm still kind of surprised that, say, a guy loses his job and he's open to contracting. Here in the States, they don't just go incorporate.
We don't carry the liabilities you guys do down in the U.S., though. Our government takes care of a lot of the liabilities that you're forced as an employer to carry. You know, 95% of your insurance is in the U.S. just are not applicable up here.
Well, yeah, but you still have to withhold employee tax, right? You withhold for employees.
Yeah, and we're liable for, you know, they're more concerned here that you're paying your contractor for their holidays than they are about the person getting hurt.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Well, down here, see, that maybe in the, like, labor temp world, you know, where you're talking about your workers' comp and that kind of stuff. In IT contracting, that's not an issue.
But you know what, Jerry? If Obama gets his way, then we'll have the same socialist America as the socialist Canada, so that'll be good, right?
Well, you know, I tell you, I was torn
Well, not really torn. I mean, I knew who I was voting for, but I knew that if Obama was reelected, that my business would just skyrocket, and it has. I mean, I've been so busy since the day after the election. It's been just nuts. Unbelievable.
Now, are you in the gun business? Because it seems to be gun stores that I know that are that busy.
I've been wanting to get a new gun, and the last three times I've gone to the gun store, it's a two-hour wait.
Hey,
I mean, there's 40 people in there.
I know this isn't the topic, but I'll just tell you real quick. I bought my wife a gun about 2 weeks before the election. I bought myself the exact same one about 2 weeks later. The price had gone up $100.
Hey, guys, I'm going to bounce. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, bye. I need your scores, Rebecca.
85 and 85. It was an amazing show today. It really was.
All right. Well, let me know what you need.
I will, definitely. Give me about an hour.
All right. So, yeah, what guns did you get, Mike?
I wanted a pocket gun, so I got the Smith & Wesson Defender 380. It's just a small pocket gun. It's very if I'm wearing a pair of jeans and I got it in my pocket, you don't even know it's there.
Skinny jeans?
I said if I'm wearing a pair of jeans.
Yeah, I was wondering, are you wearing skinny jeans?
Jerry, how do you know about skinny jeans?
I'm hip.
That's what I was just going to say, because, of course, we all know I'm a hipster, so, of course, I'm wearing those skinny, you know, hip-type jeans.
Yeah. All right. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about, chit-chat about? It's just a busy year, I'm telling you. Wow. Nuts.
I want to know what kind of gun you're trying to buy.
I need a carry piece. And I'm going to get a 9mm. So
I find it interesting that that's a carry piece for you, because I can't carry mine. It's too big. It's uncomfortable. I don't like carrying it.
Well, some of the ones that I've looked at, like I've noticed that many of the guns, they'll have like a carry version of it, or like the regular, you know, like the Glock 9mm. They'll have the same thing, but a smaller scaled down, you know, to put in your suit or something.
Yeah, like I have a Bursa 380, and one of the versions of that is the Bursa concealed carry 380. It's the same thing, but smaller.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people say, well, the 9mm, it doesn't stop people, whatever. Well, if I'm ever in a situation, a couple of shots with a 9mm is going to certainly slow somebody down, you know?
Well, with the bullets that I carry, which I won't say publicly, believe me, my 380 is going to slow them down too.
And as soon as I'm all squared away, I will start to put myself in positions where it might go down.
I've tried, but I can't do it all.
All right, everybody. Love you all, but I got to go. Feel free to keep on chit-chatting. My line's ringing. Got to roll. Good luck.
I don't think anyone else is here. Kathy, are you here?